Thick skin is better than sin.
But the weight penalty.
He snorted again. Your problem is that you had that astronaut guiding your hand.
Rodriguez, I said.
Yes. He spent his life on scientific excursions to Mars, didn't he? Rode out there on elegant state-of-the-art spacecraft designed to be as efficient as possible, slimmed down to the least possible gram, worried about every cent of cost and every newton of rocket thrust.
That's the way spacecraft have to be designed, isn't it?
Oh, certainly, Fuchs answered sarcastically. If you're working with academics and engineers who've never moved their own carcasses farther than the vacation centers on the moon, they produce highly refined designs, so highly refined that they use the very latest materials, the most sophisticated new systems and equipment they can conceive.
What's wrong with that? I asked.
Nothing, if you're designing the craft for someone else to use. If you're worried about spending the boss's money. If your design philosophy is to give your master a vessel that has the very latest of everything, and is built at the lowest possible cost. An impossible contradiction, don't you see?
Yes, but...
But if you're prospecting out among the asteroids, Fuchs went on, overriding my objection, then you learn pretty quickly that your ship has got to be strong, powerful, with as many redundant systems as you can pack onto it. You're a billion kilometers from anywhere out in the belt. You're on your own. You can't expect somebody to come out and repair you or bring you a fresh pot of coffee when you run out.
He was enjoying this lecture, I could see. He was smiling with unfeigned pleasure.
So here we are, you and me, both determined to get to the surface of Venus. You allow your astronaut to design as dainty a vessel as he can, sleek and slick and pared down to a hair's breadth in every detail. Why? Because that's the way he's always operated. Because his attitude, his training, his whole life has been spent in demanding the most elegant designs the engineers can create.
And we failed, I admitted silently. Hesperus broke up and crashed, and Phosphorus before her, I finally realized.
Now me, Fuchs tapped his chest with two fingers of his right hand. I'm not elegant. I'm a prospector from the asteroid belt, a rock rat. I was out there with Gunn and the other pioneers before your father even dreamed about sticking his grubby fingers into asteroidal mining. I saw that the ships that succeeded were the over-designed, over-built, over-equipped clunkers that could take a beating and still bring their crews back alive. Now, which type of vessel do you think would do better against the... rigors of the Venusian environment.
I asked, did you suspect that there would be metal-eating organisms in the upper clouds?
No, not for a minute. But I knew that my ship had to have a skin thick enough to take whatever Venus could dish out, not a cockle shell like yours.
The bugs are eating away at your hull too, aren't they? He waved a hand.
Not anymore. We're so deep into the second cloud deck that the outside temperature is rising to well over 100 degrees Celsius. The boiling point of water. He made a sardonic smile. The bugs are roasting nicely.
And there aren't any other organisms at this level?
I've assigned Marguerite to sample the clouds. So far, no signs of bugs. I suspect that the hotter it gets out there, the less likely that anything could live in it.
I nodded agreement. He spoke on and on about the superior design of Lucifer, and how well the ship was holding up to the constantly increasing pressure and high temperature of the atmosphere outside the hull.
In another 10 or 12 hours, we'll break out below the clouds into clear air. Then we can begin the search for what's left of Phosphorus.
And my brother's body, I mumbled.
Yes, he said. I'm looking forward to seeing your father's face when he has to hand me that 10 billion. That should be something worth waiting for.
He chortled with unalloyed glee. His laughter was cut short. The ship lurched as if some giant hand had slapped it sideways. My dinner bowls clattered off the tray table and onto the carpeted floor. I nearly slid off my chair. An alarm started hooting. Fuchs gripped the arms of his swivel chair, his face turning into blind rage. He pounded a fist on the phone keyboard and roared something in that Asian language the crew used. I could not understand the words, but easily recognized the tone. What the hell's happening? A high-pitched, frightened voice replied in a rapid staccato over the keening of the alarm. Fuchs jumped out of his chair. The deck was slanting noticeably as he came around the desk. "Come with me," he said grimly. We staggered along the passageway, walking uphill the few steps it took to reach the bridge. The alarm's wail cut off, but the deck beneath our feet continued to buck and toss. Fuchs went straight to his command chair. The other crew stations were occupied, so I stood by the hatch, holding onto its rim. Marguerite came up behind me, and without thinking about it, I slid an arm around her waist to steady her. The bridge's main screen showed a bewilderingly rapid flow of graphs, sharply curving lines in many different colors laid out over a gridwork of lines. Fuchs spat out an order and the screen cleared momentarily. Then a computer-enhanced image came up that made no sense to me. It showed a circle with a dot off to one side and pulsing rings of light flowing outward from it, like the ripples made in a pond when you throw a stone into the water. "Subsolar point," Fuchs muttered, "even down at this level." I understood what he meant. Venus turns so slowly on its axis that the spot on the planet directly beneath the sun stays at high noon for more than 7 hours at a time. The atmosphere beneath that subsolar point heats up tremendously, as if a blowtorch were blazing away at it hour after hour. That terrible heating is what drives the super-rotation winds high up in the Venusian atmosphere, where the air is thin enough for winds of 400 kilometers per hour to race around the planet. Lower down, where the atmosphere is much thicker, such winds are damped down. But not completely, we were finding. Like sluggish ripples in a thick, soupy pond, there were waves flowing out from the subsolar point even at the depth to which Lucifer had already penetrated. We were being tossed along that wavefront like a surfer caught on a gigantic curl, driven across the planet like a very tiny leaf caught in a very large, deliberate, slow but inexorable wave. While I stood there, gripping the hatch frame with one hand and Marguerite with the other, Fuchs battled to right the ship and break it free of the wave that was blowing us halfway around Venus. The crew, for once, were not impassive. As Fuchs rattled out orders, their faces showed grim intent, even the wide eyes and gaping mouths of fear. Fuchs took his eyes off the screens for a moment, and saw Marguerite and me standing there, hanging on while Lucifer bobbed and pitched in the grip of the massive wave. "The engines are useless," he said to us. "Like trying to stop a tsunami with a blowgun." The two technicians glanced at him when they heard tsunami, but one glare from Fuchs and they got back to their work of trying to hold the ship in trim. "The only thing we can do is ride it out until we get to the night side again," Fuchs murmured, thinking aloud. "It ought to damp out over there." Yes, I thought. It ought to. But we had believed that the subsolar wave would be no problem at this depth into the atmosphere. Venus believed otherwise. Now we were in the grip of a mammoth wave of energy that was pushing us along at gale force velocity, flinging the ship headlong across the planet like a frail dandelion tuft at the mercy of the inexorable tidal wave. "Deeper," Fuchs muttered. "We've got to go deeper." Mutterings. I stayed at the hatch, clinging to Marguerite for what seemed like hours. The ship kept bucking and shuddering, riding the massive wave that was driving us halfway across the planet. But although my body was still, my mind was working furiously. This subsolar wave was like a moving wall that pushed us away from the daylight side of Venus. If the wreckage of Phosphorus and Alex's body were on that side of the planet, it was going to be next to impossible to reach them, unless the wave truly did peter out at a lower altitude. If it didn't, we would have to wait a month or more for the planet's ponderously slow rotation to swing the Aphrodite region to the night side. I doubted that Fuchs had supplies enough for us to dawdle down here for several weeks. I know that Hesperus certainly hadn't. I wondered if Lucifer, over-designed though it was, could physically survive in Venus's thick, hot